From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Doris Yarovich came to America from her native Romania as a young child. She grew up among immigrants in New York City, and after medical school came to Durham to practice psychiatry at Duke. Her first short story won a contest at 17 Magazine when she was still a teenager, and she's been writing fiction ever since. Her collection, American Dreaming, was released this year, and today on The State of Things, she reads her short story, Facts.
Before she was ever born, Lisa's parents had a major philosophical difference. This difference kept them from getting married in the first place. Lisa's mother, Shelley, wanted children, while Bruce, her father, did not. Shelley never failed to point out that Bruce had been honest and upfront about this. He'd told Shelley on their second date about the mental illness he did not want to pass on to a child. Shelley understood. Shelley agreed. But for her, everything changed with the first unexpected bouts of morning sickness late in her 38th year. When her mother spoke to Lisa about her father, her voice softened and her eyes drifted beyond Lisa's right shoulder, up to a point far away. Sometimes a dreamy smile played on her lips. Hearing about Bruce as a 4-, 5-, 6-year-old, Lisa would be filled with a nose-pricking yearning for the tall man with the long black hair pulled into a ponytail, whom she knew from the 3x5 photo in the heart-shaped ceramic frame on her dresser. But by the time she was 11, 12, a hammering fury filled her chest at the mention of Bruce's name. So began her campaign to prove he didn't matter in her life. She'd cut her mother short when his name came up. Leave the room. Curse him. By the time Lisa was 14, she had won. Shelley no longer talked about Bruce, and Lisa made sure no one else in her life knew he existed. Yet here she was, being taken to meet him. Curled in the passenger seat of Gabe's Honda Civic, going 70 up Interstate 95, Lisa kept her icy hands tucked into her armpits. The flashcards she'd made the night before, index cards covered with microbiology facts she needed to memorize by Monday, lay untouched, rubber-banded on her lap. "Hungry?" Gabe said, flicking his eyes from the road to Lisa. She jumped, drawing a sharp breath. "Oh, sorry," he said, smiling with a bewildered frown. "I just thought you might be hungry by now. You skipped breakfast. I packed you an egg sandwich on an English muffin." "You're so sweet. And there's a carton of orange juice in the cooler by your feet." She blinked and noticed the red and white container for the first time. "I'm not hungry, but thanks." "Maybe you should eat a little anyway. You know how you get when you skip meals." She turned toward the loblolly pines flying past her window so he wouldn't notice her roll her eyes. But at the same time, she told herself, "He's right. You do get bitchy when you're hungry. He's only stating a fact." Turning back toward him, she noticed that instead of his usual flannel shirt over a tee, he wore a denim button-down tucked neatly into black jeans. His dark curls were flattened and slightly frizzy, meaning he'd run a brush across them. She skimmed his cheek with her fingertips. "You shaved." A smile flickered across his red lips, the reddest lips she'd ever seen on a guy. Sometimes, for a split second, she felt the urge to turn her face as his came toward her for a kiss. But of course she didn't. She kissed with her eyes closed. "I shaved in honor of meeting your dad," Gabe said. "I wish you wouldn't call him that." "But it's a fact. That's who he is." "Oh, I thought a dad was someone who did more than donate sperm and disappear," she said, then bit her lower lip. "Lise, we're mending fences, remember?" "There's nothing to mend, really. My mother didn't need him. I was fine without him." "That's what you've said." "It's true." Facts. Normally, facts were her friends, so why was nausea rising into her throat? Gabe was humming along with a dead song on one of his CDs. This was just an ordinary conversation to him. He glanced at her, his brow smooth, and his green eyes completely unperturbed, and winked. The nausea in her throat tightened into a knot, and she couldn't speak. "You can't argue with facts," she told herself. Not that she and Gabe argued. Hadn't they compared facts about what each wanted out of life as carefully as computers match answer keys to bubble sheets? Hadn't they both said, 3 kids, a house with a huge yard out in the country, a stay-at-home parent, with Gabe agreeing to play that part? I've never been the ambitious type into the rat race thing, Gabe told her on their first date. That's pretty refreshing, she'd said, laughing. Now my turn. And then her mouth went parched and she swallowed. She recited, My friends might say I am into the rat race thing, that I'm a workaholic, but they don't know that I go to Wellspring to get special ingredients to cook up special dinners Friday nights. But, then again, sometimes I worry that I got into med school by mistake, that I can't possibly belong there, that they'll figure it out and send me packing. So I work really hard to make sure that never happens. Gabe's forehead had remained smooth, and the languorous smile that had trickled across his lips hadn't wavered. He'd watched her with his face slightly upturned and his eyes narrowed, as if savoring a glass of good wine. She cleared her throat and kept talking, her words spilling out faster and faster. And, let's see, more dirt on me, more dirt. I'm a restless sleeper. I kick without meaning to. She'd flushed and turned her eyes to her lap. And, ready for the big one? I've never told a guy this. My, parents were not married. My mom is a 60s throwback, a space cadet, but an absolute sweetheart. My father did not want me to be born. She'd looked back up at Gabe. He's crazy. He'd have to be to not want. No, I mean crazy, really. Please let me finish. Certifiable. He's been hospitalized a bunch of times. So far, I haven't had any breakdowns, but I'm still young. It could happen. Like a time bomb. Not that any of it matters to me, but you should know if... She'd locked her eyes onto his placid ones, thinking, Okay, leave now. Go ahead. I can take it. I don't need a guy and never have. But his eyes didn't widen and his face didn't flush. He reached across the table and stroked her cheek with the backs of his first and middle fingers. Is that all the dirt? He'd said, eyes twinkling, the dimple in his cheek deepening, and Lisa's chest had expanded with elation, and she'd grabbed his hand and kissed the square knuckles, and they'd gone back to his place and made love quietly in the bedroom. Gabe moved into her place 2 weeks later. They hit D.C. around 10 and sailed through without any traffic. In the same way that he planned their dates and was planning their wedding, Gabe had arranged their entire drive to avoid major city rush hours. Lisa ate her egg sandwich and drank Tropicana straight from the carton, not noticing the flowered Dixie cups Gabe had stacked next to the cooler. She began to flip through her microbiology cards. Shigella, gram-negative rods, ferment glucose but not lactose. Lactose. I forgot to tell you I had colic as an infant, she said, not looking up and continuing to flip cards. What? You know, when I was giving you the facts. On me. I left out colic. You poor thing. She cast a rapid glance at him, but there was no sarcasm in his expression. It's not like I remember it or anything. Must have been hard on my mom. You know, having a baby that doesn't shut up for a minute. Who knows? Maybe I cried and cried when Bruce met me, too. Maybe he thought it was a sign of mental illness. Gabe's eyes darted to Lisa and back to the road. Lise, tell me you're not worrying about what he'll think of you. You know he's going to love you. You're the perfect daughter. Beautiful, smart, accomplished. It's going to be really neat getting together. Finally getting closure. Closure? He smiled. Hey, I took 2 semesters worth of psych. I don't know. She decided now was not the time to tell him how she always kept an eye on herself, for signs. Not that she thought Bruce was right about her, but still. The possibility filled her veins with ice. She worked hard to not let herself get too angry, or too loud, or too sad, or even too happy. Lisa, man, Duke Medical School, really, what more could any father want? You know how psyched my parents are about it. Lisa wanted to say that was the whole point, that Bruce should not get to meet her now, when she was somebody, if he had never wanted to meet her as a regular kid. But Gabe seemed so excited. His eyes shone, and he drummed his hands against the steering wheel in rhythm with the dead. She kept her thoughts to herself. Lisa had never been to Queens. As the highway fed into narrower, congested roads, and Gabe thrust maps into her lap, she bent all her thoughts to matching the map with the street signs and with the yellow post-it with Sarah's directions. Her hands began to warm, color returning to her fingernails. She hardly noticed the red brick buildings pressing in on them. Traffic lights blinked from green to yellow to red so rapidly that several times they found themselves midway through an intersection against the light. Finally, they were on a narrow street lined with small houses that looked so similar, Lisa wondered if people accidentally wandered through their neighbors' doors at the end of the day. Gradually, she picked out small differences here and there, a screened-in porch instead of a patio, stucco or vinyl siding instead of bricks. Gabe slowed the Honda and painstakingly maneuvered into a very tight parking place.
Doris Yarovich's story Facts continues after a short break. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Durham-based writer Doris Yarovich continues with her short story Facts from her collection, American Dreaming.
Lisa took a deep breath and stepped out of the car. Her right leg tingled from having been tucked underneath her the last half hour, and she shook it out and winced as she put weight on it. Gabe sprang around the front of the car and put an arm around her, giving her shoulder a squeeze. "Ready?" he asked. "I'm fine," she said, surprised because it was true. "I don't really feel a thing. It's like I'm watching myself approach the house, watching myself touch the buzzer." But before she could finish her sentence, the paneled glass door of number 6839 opened, and then the white wood door behind that swung back, and out came a middle-aged woman, slightly plump, with short red-brown hair. She wore a navy cotton dress that Lisa recognized as Land's End, and a beige and navy silk scarf knotted around her neck like a flight attendant's. "Lisa," she called. "Welcome, welcome, Lisa. I'm Sarah. We spoke when you called." To Gabe, she called, "I'm Sarah, Bruce's wife. Please, please come in." The woman's bright green eyes crinkled in a warm smile, and she stepped into the house while holding the screen door open with one arm and beckoning to Lisa and Gabe with the other. Lisa noticed that Sarah was plumper and slightly taller than her mother, better dressed and younger seeming. But as she stepped closer, she could make out the web of fine lines around her eyes, as well as a deep groove just above her eyebrows into which some makeup had caked. Lisa stepped through the door as if she were leaving a dock for a canoe. The door led directly into a small living room crowded with fading furniture and stacked with books. There were bookshelves built into the walls across from the sofa, bookshelves on the wall beside the front door, and then more books piled on the end tables next to the sofa and in stacks on the floor beside the chairs. Abstract oil paintings with heavy brush strokes adorned the book-free areas of wall. The coffee table was set with a tray of Milano cookies, cut vegetables and dip, and four empty glasses. As they handed their coats to Sarah, Lisa's eyes scanned the empty room. She let her breath out through pursed lips, then froze, when in the next moment a tall man strode in from the back of the house. He wore a black long-sleeved t-shirt with faded jeans, and his hair was thin and gray, but still pulled away from his face in a skinny ponytail that dangled down his back. The skin on his face hung loosely, and his mouth curled down at the edges. Lisa noticed that his hands were trembling. His black eyes darted from Sarah to Lisa and then rested on Gabe. "Who's he?" were his first words. His voice was gruff. Lisa felt a stab of disappointment. "Bruce, this is Lisa, and," Sarah began, her own voice even and calm, but he cut her off. I know who she is. Looks just like Shelley did years ago. But who the devil's he?
Gabe Sutter, Lisa said, finding her voice. My fiancé.
Nice to meet you, sir, Gabe said, extending his right hand, which Bruce gripped firmly after an awkward moment's hesitation.
What's he doing here? Bruce asked Sarah.
Why don't we all sit down? Sarah motioned to the sofa. I'll make some herbal tea.
You can offer them coffee. They're not on lithium. They can have it, Bruce barked,
and Lisa noticed Sarah's nostrils flare momentarily.
I'd love some coffee, thanks, Gabe said.
He sank into the sofa and stretched his arm along its back. It was a long drive. I thought I might drop off several times.
Thought you said she was going to be in town, Bruce said to Sarah, who gave an insouciant shrug and disappeared into the kitchen.
He was still standing, as was Lisa, who suddenly found it difficult to move. He frowned at Lisa.
Thought she said you said you were going to be in town. You didn't make a special trip just to see me, did you?
Lisa swallowed and glanced at Gabe. He had helped himself to a cookie and looked as if he were settling in to watch a football game.
In fact, it was Gabe's idea to, give a call, she finally said. We're getting married in a couple months, so we thought it was a good time to come.
6 weeks, Gabe said.
Lisa looked blankly at him.
We're getting married in 6 weeks, Gabe said to Bruce.
Lisa's skin tingled with irritation, so she drew in a long, deep breath silently through her nose and held it. When the feeling passed, her skin was covered in goosebumps and she felt jumpy, unsettled. She crossed the room and dropped onto the couch into the space left for her by Gabe's arm. She exhaled. Her muscles slackened and started to warm, sitting next to Gabe. Bruce stood frowning at them for a moment, and then he too sat, on the edge of the chair across from them. He kept his knees apart and rested his elbows on them. His hands dangled between his legs. The tremor was still there. He caught Lisa's eyes examining his hands and barked out, "Lithium."
"Excuse me?"
"That's the goddamn shaking, the lithium." Lisa nodded, looking at the carpet. The room went silent.
"You need money?" Bruce asked after a while.
"What?" Lisa said.
"Money for the wedding?"
"No, sir, we certainly don't," Gabe said quickly, "but thanks."
"For what? I wasn't offering any. Just trying to figure out why the devil you're here. Maybe to check out the old man, make sure he's..."
Sarah hurried back into the living room and perched on the arm of Bruce's chair, closing both hands on his shoulders.
"Bruce, your daughter wanted to meet you like we've already discussed," she said, her voice soothing, smooth as satin.
"Ever the social worker," Bruce snorted.
Sarah colored.
Bruce continued, "Did she tell you that's what she does? All day long, social work, fixing people's lives. That's how it is. The fixers and fixees."
He laughed a gruff laugh.
"She fixes, fixes, fixes at work, then comes home and tries to fix me." He laughed again.
"Well, it's worked pretty well for 15 years, Sarah said. Lisa cleared her throat. She felt as if she were watching a movie starring an actor she had heard of but never before seen.
You've been married 15 years, she said.
I was 8 then, she calculated.
"Yes, next month," Sarah said. "And don't you let Bruce's manner put you off. This grumpiness keeps people away, but it's really just his way of protecting himself. He's a softy on the inside."
Bruce snorted and shrugged his wife's arm off his shoulders.
"God's sake," he said. "See? There she goes again. Counselor mode."
A kettle screeched in the other room, and Sarah sprang up and disappeared. Lisa's eyes flitted all around the room, trying to read the titles on the spines of the books surrounding them, taking in the faded prints on the walls, and finally coming to rest on a framed 8x10 photo of Bruce, Sarah, and 2 young girls.
"You doing all right?" Bruce said, so abruptly that Lisa jumped.
She turned to find Bruce's narrowed eyes on her, but his eyebrows were angled slightly up, deepening the creases in his forehead, as if that was his customary expression. Gabe patted her thigh. How warm and solid he felt beside her, like a massive oak or an immovable outcropping of rock. "I've been doing pretty good," she said.
"She's in medical school," Gabe said.
Bruce's furry eyebrows inched up and he nodded. His eyes slid across the sofa and came to rest on Gabe.
"Good for her. And you? You in medical school?"
"Me?"
"You."
Lisa's eyes were drawn back to the photo on the wall. The girls were dark-haired and looked about 10 and 12. She heard Gabe say, "I work the specialty cheese counter of our local organic grocer, Wellspring."
"Cheese? You sell cheese? And you're how old?"
24.
"You're 24 and you sell cheese?"
"It pays the rent and it gives me time to do..."
"And how long have you two known each other?"
"Who are the girls in that picture?" Lisa cut in, turning back to them. She noticed Gabe's flushed face and Bruce's intense stare and wanted to rise and place her body between those raptor's eyes and Gabe, but she only inched closer to Gabe, stroked his arm. "Who are those girls?" Lisa repeated, hearing her voice brittle as ice. At that moment, Sarah returned, carrying a teak tray with four steaming mugs on it. "Those are our daughters, Ashley and Eleanor," Sarah answered for Bruce. "Maybe next time you can meet them, Lisa. But today I thought it would be best if it was just your father and you and..."
"She's going to marry a 24-year-old clerk in a grocery store," Bruce muttered to Sarah.
Lisa shot to her feet.
"I think that's our cue to go," she said, cheeks burning.
"Lise," Gabe said.
"Just for your information, though, he's not a clerk, but the cheese buyer for one of the most upscale organic grocers in the entire Southeast. Not that it would matter one bit to me if he were a clerk. And furthermore, who the hell are you to..."
"Lise," Gabe whispered, tugging on her arm. At the same time, she saw the corners of Bruce's mouth curl upward in a smile, and a rage began to whirl in her head like a cyclone, making everything around her go white.
"No, let me finish. You, a stranger, with no effect on my life, somehow feel you have the right to pass judgment on the man I've chosen? The decisions I make have absolutely nothing, nothing to do with you."
The angrier she felt, the softer her voice got, until she could only squeeze out a hoarse whisper. Bruce pinned her with his dark eyes.
"I'm trying to figure out what you two have in common, whether you're equals, whether he'll make you happy," Bruce said. "You been hospitalized yet?"
Now Lisa felt her knees fold under her, and she sank back next to Gabe.
"No," she said weakly. "Good. See? By your age, I'd already had my psychotic break. Good."
The creases in his forehead softened.
"Bruce," Sarah cut in. "She should know these things. He," Bruce motioned with his teacup toward Gabe, "he should definitely know these things. I don't know how much her mother told her, but here she is, so she must want information. Facts. Him, too."
"Facts aren't everything," Sarah mumbled, but Bruce went on as if he hadn't heard.
"You know she's got insanity in her genes, my side of the family," he said to Gabe.
"Lisa's told me everything, sir."
"I believe in complete honest," Lisa began, but the word evaporated from her lips just as Bruce's eyes widened slightly in surprise.
Bruce's eyes narrowed again, and he looked her up and down. Without warning, she felt a burning in her nose and bit her upper lip until it went numb.
"Your mother tell you how I used to parade up and down Pennsylvania Avenue back when we lived in D.C., stark naked? How I thought I was the son of Elvis and would show up at recording studios demanding they cut my next record? How my mother had me committed 3 times? No, Shelley didn't tell you all that, did she, Lisa?"
"Didn't stop you from having 2 other kids, Lisa spat, and to her horror, she felt tears stinging her eyes. She looked at the floor and tried to recall names of anaerobic bacteria.
"Those are Sarah's daughters," Bruce said, and his voice softened. "Those girls aren't stuck with an iota of my DNA. They're lovely girls. Eleanor just started college. I adopted them because they needed a daddy."
"Bruce is making it sound much worse than it really is, his manic depressive problem," Sarah said brightly. "We all have strengths and weaknesses. There's no guarantee Lisa inherited what you have. And besides, you've been so well on the medicine." She turned toward Lisa and Gabe. Not a single hospitalization the entire time we've been together, really. So don't you believe it's as bleak as all that. Devil's bargain. Gave up the pottery, the painting, the university professorship. Teach high school art, Bruce mumbled. He frowned into his tea. But that's really cool, sir, Gabe said. Bruce said nothing, but tilted his frown up toward Gabe. Lisa's stomach spasmed with irritation, and then a wave of guilt as she realized the irritation was again directed at Gabe, not Bruce. She pictured the 3-foot-tall ceramic urn which her mother used as an umbrella stand, which Bruce had made 25 years before. As a little girl, she'd stare at the fiery red and gold swirls that ran across its surface and run her fingers across the ceramic cherubs that stood out in relief. It was beautiful. She wished she could make something like it. She'd imagined disappearing into the urn, had once tried to fit inside it after an argument with her mother, but it was too narrow. So, back to you. How long have you known him? What do you see in him? Bruce asked Lisa, again fastening his eyes onto hers. A wave of fatigue washed over her, and her stomach tightened. Gabe twisted to face her. He too seemed interested in her answer. She tried to swallow the lump in her throat. She heard herself say, "We've known each other a few months only, but talk about love at first sight. I mean, he's the sweetest, most thoughtful guy. He anticipates my every need and..." "What do you do besides sell cheese?" Bruce shot at Gabe. "Well, I play ultimate frisbee, and I'm trying to get in a band and..." "Graduate from college?" "Well, yes, sir, of course." "And you," to Lisa. "You play frisbee? You into rock?" Lisa slapped the couch. "What is this, the third degree? This visit is not about Gabe's qualification to be my husband. Leave him out of your interrogations. What do I see in him? He's a great guy. His every thought revolves around how to best take care of me. No one's done that before. Okay? That's enough. None of this has anything to do with you." "You sure about that?" Bruce asked. The white rage burning in Lisa's head brought words from her lips without a moment's hesitation. "Yes, I'm sure. You know nothing about me, what I might need or not need, and that's been exactly what you wanted, so you should be happy." A violent trembling started in her chest as the thoughts of all Bruce didn't know flooded her brain. How in high school she'd avoided bringing friends to the cluttered apartment Shelley rarely cleaned because she was too busy working 2 jobs. How her mother's mouth used to tighten when Lisa pointed out that her pants again skimmed an inch above her ankle bone, that they needed to go shopping. "Gabe, I think it's really time to go," she said. "You're the one wanted to come here," Bruce grumbled. "I'm not the one who wanted to come." "Really? So he says jump and you say how high?" Lisa was on her feet, face turned toward Gabe, tugging on his sleeve. She was trying to pull a boulder. Gabe mouthed something at her. She flushed and shrugged as if she didn't understand. Gabe rose at last, leaned toward her. His breath was warm and damp against her earlobe. She shivered. She shook her head once at Gabe, widening her eyes in an attempt to send a panicked message to Gabe's eyes beneath the radar of Bruce's gaze. Of course Bruce noticed. He watched them both with a frown, squinting. In her ear, Gabe whispered again, "Ask him. We came all this way. Invite him." 2 weeks ago, they'd been at the dining table of their tiny apartment, addressing the creamy wedding envelopes, when Gabe casually said, "I thought maybe we should invite your dad to the wedding." She recalled her sense of incredulity, the strangled silence. Gabe's calm voice saying, "You know, I'm not used to the messed-up family deal. The way I see it, you and I should mend fences, get our stuff resolved before starting a family of our own, a clean slate. Plus, I thought if we get both your parents walking you down the aisle, it would be like my wedding present to you." And he'd smiled, that expectant, hopeful smile, and before she knew it, she was agreeing to everything, to anything. But now, in Bruce's living room, she stepped away from the red mouth, the soft lips. She stared at Gabe. "You've got to be kidding," she whispered. Sarah was on her feet now, too, but Bruce remained seated, his lips curled in a smug smile. "Lisa, believe it or not, Bruce is a loving father who wants so much for his children. He wanted so much for you, but, well, it's not always easy to see. He has tried to do what he thinks is best for you, in his own way. I mean, staying away, he thought that would help you, since he has such trouble seeing himself as someone who can have a positive influence." Bruce grunted, but Sarah continued. "So please don't take..." Now Gabe put up his hand, stopping Sarah. "There's no need to apologize, really," he said, and his voice was even, mellow, too smooth. "Lisa and I are planning a beautiful wedding. Picture this." He framed the air with his hands. "It's going to be on the beach at sunset, really cool. Guitars strumming in the background. People barefoot in the sand. Lisa's totally excited about it. She's very happy, Bruce, sir. She's not messed up or anything like that. She doesn't dwell on the past. She looks forward, always forward. Nothing in the past matters to her. But she's getting married in 6 weeks and starting her own little family. Well, hopefully it won't be little for too long. And she came here because we'd both be honored if both her father and her mother could be there, sir. You know, start us off on the right foot. We're all one family now."
Doris Yarovitch's story, Facts, continues after a short break. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We continue now with Doris Yarovitch's story, Facts, about a Duke medical student and her fiancé who traveled to New York to invite their long-lost father to their wedding.
Everything in the room went still, miniaturized in the glassy expression in Bruce's eye. Then Lisa felt the room bend and begin to rotate, and she glanced longingly at the couch, but Gabe's arm around her waist held her propped up against his side. His hand caressed her hip. She was the bride doll pinned to the top of a cake, and looked at Gabe, saw the smile on his lips as he waited for Bruce's reply, and she tried to bend her own mouth into a smile to match Gabe's, and found she could do it. She could smile. The words "unified front" flashed irrelevantly across her mind. She didn't want Bruce at her wedding because he was everything that was bad in her life, everything evil, and what had today proved but just that? She felt vindicated in wanting to leave him far behind. She wanted Bruce to have nothing at all to do with her adult life, her life as a competent, mentally healthy wife and doctor. But if Gabe wanted Bruce at their wedding, if he thought it would fix things, fix her, well, she'd just grin and bear it and get on with things after. It was just a day, after all, just a drop in the bucket. She tried to block out everything but the touch of Gabe's fingers against her jeans. In the same slow, gentle way, his fingers sometimes caressed her throat, her shoulder, her breast. Sometimes they massaged her temples as she read late into the night. She heard her name spoken, muffled as if through sleep. She realized her eyes had been glued to the coffee table. She lifted them and scanned the room. Everyone was silent, and everyone was looking at her. She put her hand up to smooth her hair and looked at Bruce.
"I said, do you want me at your wedding?" Bruce said roughly.
Images flashed through her brain like a slideshow. Shelley baking a cake the morning of Lisa's 6th birthday after working a double shift. Kids on the playground asking if her father was dead. Shelley saying, "I'll make it up to you. I'll be both mother and father." The extra ticket at high school graduation, the empty chair at her college science award dinner. Her mother's eyes when Lisa told her, over an expensive lunch at Farrington, "I have found a man who will always love me, Mom, so don't you worry about me anymore." Did she want Bruce at her wedding? She felt the burning stares of everyone in the room. She was so tired. How could she tell what she wanted today? "If Gabe thinks you should be there," she wanted to say, "come." Instead, she said, "If you want to come." Gabe reached into the backpack she hadn't even noticed him carry into the house and produced a cream-colored envelope. Sarah took it from his hand with a sunny smile. Gabe smiled back at Sarah. Bruce ran his hand over his mouth, didn't take the envelope from Sarah, and instead continued to study Lisa, head cocked to one side. "You really love this guy?" he asked. His voice had dropped in volume, speaking to her as if no one else was in the room. Something in her chest released. Gabe's fingers tightened their grip on her hip, and she heard him say, "I'm going to take really excellent care of her, sir." And Lisa knew he would. "What I'm asking is, do you really know him enough to love him?" Bruce said to Lisa, as if Gabe hadn't said a word. "Do you know yourself? People go through their lives blind as bats, thumping into walls, pretending it doesn't matter. I know a thing or two about the world and how things can turn out if you're not careful." "Careful," Lisa heard. Her heart clenched, cooled. Her voice rose. "Of course I love him," she answered, and she believed it. At the same time, her throat constricted as she caught something in the way Bruce's forehead furrowed, in the way the light vanished from his eyes, that she would remember years later, after the short walk down the makeshift beach aisle lined with flaming torches, escorted by Gabe's father, because Bruce did not come after all. Bruce's expression was nothing in that moment if not sad, aching with sorrow, and Lisa would wake up one morning 8 years later after a busy night on call in her rheumatology practice and hear Gabe humming to himself as he cooked her breakfast, eggs and sausage, which she told him she did not want but which he insisted were good for her energy post-call. And she'd hear the humming interrupted only when he rushed off to pick up their baby, who had awoken and was crying in his crib. Lisa would swing her legs over the side of their bed, pause on the edge, and think, "When was the last time I paused to think about anything?" Bruce's lost, hooded eyes would flash into her mind, accompanied by Sarah's words, "Facts aren't everything." Caught in the frenzy of days at the hospital, rushing from one place to the next, stomach already heavy with baby number two, as planned, Lisa would sit on the bed and think, "What do Gabe and I really have in common?" The thought would knock the wind out of her. She'd rush into a steaming shower and let the hot water run down her face, trying to melt the thought and the slow, heavy rise of sorrow in her chest. She'd tell herself, "You've got a husband who is devoted, reliable, a man who is everything your father was not, and nothing that he was. You've proven that Bruce doesn't matter, that you can be a success in spite of him. Everything's going according to the plan you and Gabe outlined when you first met." And for the first time, she would let herself wonder if that was enough.
That was Durham-based writer and psychiatrist Doris Yarovitch reading her story, Facts, from her collection American Dreaming.